through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Monday, y'all. Hope everyone is at home safe or got to work safely with this snow. You know, we're going to talk about a big move that was made over the weekend. Before we do that, though, I just have to say, first responders are a different kind of person, and I'm saying this for a reason. So, Curtis, I hadn't told you this yet, but Jake, I did tell you this story this morning. I didn't know that I was going to get into work because my car was snowed in, and I just drive a little Chevy. So I'm like, I'm not in a truck. I don't know if I'm going to make it in the snow. So I figured I would give it a try. So I went out and I had a rake and I was like, I'm just going to rake the snow.
A rake?
Well, I don't have anything
That'll
else.
That'll do it.
I don't. So I went out.
That's really.
No, listen. So I had a spatula to take the car off or the snow off the top of my car. And then I had a rake to clear a path for me to drive out of.
Stacey, I'm concerned.
And I was like, it's going to work.
You were totally prepared for this.
5 minutes, I'm getting nothing done. I am getting absolutely nothing done. I'm dripping sweat and I've changed like an inch of snow. And so this guy down the street is like, hey, do you want a shovel? He's just pulled up, presumably from work or whatever. And I was like, yeah, sure. Sure thing. So he comes over and he actually starts helping me. So he's shoveling snow for me to be able to pull out of a parking spot while I'm spatula-ing the snow off the top of my car.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, first he was like, we were talking about like, oh, what do you do? Because we're just making conversation. Like, we don't really know each other.
Right.
And except that he's my neighbor, but down the street. And so he's, shout out to Jordan. He is a nurse at the VA. And he, first of all, works overnights. So he's already working with veterans as a nurse. And then came up and just shoveled snow out of a parking spot for this random stranger. Only I don't know that I'm a total stranger. Because after like a minute, he goes, do you remember me?
Uh-oh.
And I was like.
Oh, no.
And I go, yeah.
But you really don't?
I didn't. Well, I didn't initially.
Okay.
And then I realized I've hit this man's car.
Yes.
So like a year and a half ago, I was pulling into a parking spot that was just a little bit tight. And I scraped up against the side of his car.
Oh.
And it was nighttime. So he got out then and he was like, oh, you know, don't even worry about it. You know what? Like, I'm actually getting a new car anyway. This one's beat up. And I was like, this guy's insane. But at the time, I'm like, all right. Thanks so much. Bye.
Yeah.
And it's that same guy. He's like, yeah, I ended up getting a new car. I was so excited to drive in the snow. Just a really nice person. Shout out to first responders in general. Shout out to people that are helping their neighbors in the snow. Shout out to Jordan, the VA nurse, who helped me out with shoveling snow.
And didn't hold a grudge
and
against you.
And didn't hold a grudge. Helped me shovel snow out of the way for my car that I hit his car with.
Well, that's an incredible.
This guy sounds too good to be true. Yeah,
no, he's just a really nice guy. I'm telling you, first responders are a different breed of person. Like they just help people.
They are. They very much are. Now, your snow experience was very different, it sounds like, from mine. I got to tell you, we lived it up. I mean, we enjoyed the snow like nobody's business. We went down. And went down to a spot where there's this huge hill, went down and did some sledding. Bodie and Jackson had the time of their lives. It was awesome. I accidentally, one of our sleds is like a blow up sled, right? So it's just like this blow up huge snowman. And I went at the bottom of the hill to stop them. And for Bodie, he was coming down and I went to go stop him and I put my hands on the snowman, and it was moving so fast that obviously it ended up turning it into like a blob, you know, when people jump down onto it and fly people off. So when my hands hit the snowman, Bodie, my one-year-old, literally does a flip over my arms. I tried to catch him. He does a flip over my arms and lands, thankfully, on his butt, but he didn't land on his head or anything, and he just looked there shell-shocked. I asked him, hey, are you okay? Did you have fun? You know, just trying to make it so he doesn't cry. And he was like, yeah, that was a proud dad moment. But we built a giant T-Rex snowman. You can go to my Twitter feed, check it out. But yeah, we had a great time. It was awesome. It was awesome.
And you guys made a giant T-Rex snowman.
Yes. We giant. It was taller than me. And you know, Brooke did all the carvings of like the leg, and we did the we made like a tail, but it ended up turning out.
It doesn't surprise me that Brooke did
really,
the skilled part.
Yeah, but it really bothered her at the end of it because she was like, "It's this is a T-Rex. It has too much. It has too great a posture right
now.
It's standing straight up.
Straight
so
back.
Somebody said that it was more like Godzilla than it was a T-Rex.
Yeah.
That a T-Rex needed to be out, but. Look,
it was the best snowman I've seen. No, it
sculptors.
Didn't even matter. It was the best snowman I've seen from anyone. I saw it and I showed both my roommates. I was like, you guys, look, this is my coworker and his wife just built this.
Well,
and they were like, oh my God.
Well, shout out to everybody that enjoyed and had fun with the snow or just stayed in and kept yourself warm and then had to realize, oh wait, I got to go to work on Monday. So then you got to spend time shoveling your driveway on Sunday. That was the worst part of it all.
Or raking.
Or
raking.
Yes.
To each their own.
Wouldn't recommend that at all.
Well, maybe you have a nice neighbor.
Yes. Maybe you have a nice neighbor
who knows?
Come in with the snow shovel. But, Stacey, over the weekend, we did get some awesome news here in regards to the Mariners.
That's exactly right. The Seattle Mariners and James Paxton agreed to a one-year, $8.5 million deal, which means James Paxton's returning to the Pacific Northwest. That is after spending time with the Yankees. So that was originally reported by someone at 650 Sportsnet. ESPN's Jeff Passan confirms the news. Guys, Paxton, 32 years old, doesn't necessarily fit that age range of that young core they're building. I love this move. Are you guys in agreement?
I love this signing by Jerry Dipoto and the Mariners.
I love it.
It's a one-year prove-it deal for Paxton, which really is a chance for him to showcase himself after an injury to the rest of the Major League Baseball in a place he loves and feels comfortable. He loves being here in the Seattle area. He's from this area in terms of being up in the Vancouverish area in Canada. This is a prime opportunity. You know, if you had a chance to go back and try and play some of your best baseball in the place you were most comfortable with, would you not take that opportunity?
I absolutely would.
And for the Mariners, it is a significant upgrade to the talent on their six-man pitching rotation, which puts them in a better position to actually compete in their division and for a wild card race, potentially. This was a year about, look, this isn't like, you know, trading for Paxton is going to take them over the hump and it's going to make them a for sure playoff contender, but it makes them more competitive and it gives them an opportunity when really where they're at, they're still in a rebuilding mode. And this is a one-year deal. So if Paxton can play extremely well and pitch well, he knows just as likely as the Mariners mm-hmm. that come trade deadline, this is an opportunity to get some significant capital back for a guy who is one of the more intriguing talents in the NFL or in Major League Baseball, with being a big left-handed pitcher who has some unique talent to him, unique stuff. I mean, I think this is a win-win for both sides.
Well, that's why we decided the Mariners accomplished three things with the signing of James Paxton. Three things. Number one, veteran presence for young guys, right? That's always a benefit. It's not what Kyle Seager does for you, because Kyle Seager is still also one of your better players, but he is also going to be the oldest guy in there. Now you bring in James Paxton as another veteran presence, this time for your starters. Number two, fan buy-in and excitement. And not only that, I mean, bringing in a fan favorite always helps. It also quiets a few of those complaints about a lack of movement with free agent signings or trades from a general manager we are very used to seeing make moves. Number three, and you just pointed this out, Jake, you acquire a potential trade piece to help continue to make moves. My personal favorite thing would be to possibly happen is that Paxton, Justice Sheffield, and throw in like Mitch Haniger all playing well. If you bring in like Taiwan Walker, suddenly you've got two guys that you traded for those two other guys, Sheffield and Haniger at different times, all playing well, and you can potentially swap Paxton again, which sounds a little cold-blooded, but Jake, like you said, I think Paxton knows the deal. Not only that, but seems to have a seemingly good relationship with the front office here. Curtis, how do you feel about that second one, fan buy-in and excitement?
Well, I mean, just based off the reaction on social media on Saturday night, you can tell that there is an energy now surrounding the start of spring training amongst the Mariners fan base that I would say wasn't at this level on, say, Friday night. James Paxton is a known commodity to so many Mariners fans. He's a likable guy, had some incredible seasons, some incredible moments with this team, and has been one of the best bright spots in probably the darkest era of Mariners franchise history. You bring in somebody like that to this team, somebody that the fan base doesn't have to work to know, where I think there is a little bit of, I guess, fatigue from a lot of Mariners fans, especially with this wave of young talent that hasn't reached the major league, where it's like, man, I got to do research on this guy. We all know who James Paxton is. We all know what he brings to the table.
Correct.
So I think that is a really good move that the Mariners made. There is little to no risk in bringing in James Paxton, a one-year deal. He had the injuries last year that limited his season to only, I believe, four starts with the Yankees. But you bring him in here, the expectation is not to throw 200 innings. It's for him to just be a part of this six-man rotation,
correct,
which I think plays to his strengths, because he's never been a guy that's gotten to 200 innings. He's always been around 150. So I really like the move. I think this is a move that good teams make. And as we've seen this offseason, the Mariners have not yet made a move that we could consider bad. They have made just forward progress this offseason. That's what you do in the middle of a rebuild.
Yeah, there's two things that I really love about this trade. We talked about a lot of it earlier, and Curtis, you make some great points there. Is one, I love kind of being able to pull one over the Yankees. You don't get to do that very often as Mariners fans, but you think about this, the trade you originally had for Paxton, James Paxton, it was for Justus Sheffield. And Justus Sheffield has turned himself, and as it turns out that it's heading in this direction, is him becoming a legitimate pro, a legitimate starting caliber pitcher in Major League Baseball, where he can not only be serviceable, but that he can show that he's got dominant stuff at times. That he, this guy, if he can continue to develop, could be a really, really strong part of your middle of your starting rotation. And then on top of that, you get James Paxton back. So you're going to have two of those guys that were part of that deal back with the Mariners. And Paxton didn't go on and have this illustrious career with the Yankees. You as a Mariners organization weren't necessarily sitting there thinking the whole time, gosh, if we just had James Paxton right now, we would be in a much better position. That wasn't it at all. Now you're able to bring back Paxton here in this case. And my second reason for loving that is, one, being able to pull one over the Yankees. The second one is being able to continue to keep building potentially upon what you have done, which is trying to establish a winning culture, which is what James Paxton can help you do this season. Right. And the second thing is to be able to get back more capital and potentially a better prospect that you wouldn't have been able to have in terms of a trade piece here at the trade deadline. James Paxton knows what this situation is. This isn't, you know, talking about something too soon or too early. James Paxton, when he signed a 1-year deal with the Mariners, he knew exactly the position that he was getting himself in. Hey, if I can showcase my talents this year at the beginning of the year, there is a possibility that I could get traded to a winning organization, go compete in the playoffs, go maybe go after a World Series, and guess what? It's a 1-year deal. So maybe after all that, I can still come back to the Mariners and sign a longer-term contract if both sides really wanted to when it was all said and done. So like I said before, this is a great win-win for the Mariners and for James Paxton. I'm really excited about this trade.
Now, details have yet to settle. You could assume that Margavičius would be moved to the bullpen then. Maybe Dunn drops to that final spot. We'll all see. Here's the thing. You're looking outside your house in most places, if you're listening here in Washington. You're seeing a ton of snow. But guess what? Spring training right around the corner. Pitchers and catchers reporting Thursday. This Thursday, February 18th. First full team workout is February 23rd. That's next Tuesday. I mean, I'm telling you, man, baseball right around the corner, spring training right around the corner. So in that vein, and while we're speaking of Paxton, let's go ahead and go to that no-hitter final call, cut number one right here.
Paxton ready. Here's the windup and the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a one-hopper to third. Seager's got it. Toss across. Ball game's over. James Paxton has just thrown a no-hitter. The big lefty is getting mobbed out of the mound. The lefty from Lander, British Columbia, has thrown the sixth no-hitter in the history of the Seattle Mariners franchise. The young man from British Columbia throws a no-hitter against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I feel that excitement already.
The big Maple is back.
He's back. And you know what? And Curtis, you pointed this out. Cut number two. This is what Jerry Dipoto said about that Paxton trade back in 2018.
He understood. I think he was excited for the opportunity. And I told him not to forget about us in a couple of years when his time as a free agent rolls around. Because my hope is at that point that we're on the verge of competing for a World Series. And James Paxton part two is possible. But for now, we'll just let him move on to the Yankees, and I'm sure he will make them a better club.
What do you know, Jerry?
Man.
What do you
know?
He had
some intel on that.
He really did. All right. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross here. It is 11:15. That means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tilo Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question one. It appears as though the Seahawks have reached out about Zach Ertz's availability with the Eagles. So, guys, is this just Greg Olsen all over again?
Honestly, this, to me, would be worse than Greg Olsen all over
again. Worse? Because of what
they give up. Not the talent. Not the talent. The talent actually would be way better than what Greg Olsen was here in Seattle. I love the talent of Zach Ertz. But this would be worse to me because, one, you didn't have to trade for Greg Olsen. You gave him $7 million, which was, you know, a significant chunk of money. Zach Ertz would be more than that, but you're talking about trading assets. You're talking about trading draft capital for Zach Ertz. And I don't know what the Seahawks think that they could potentially do or what they have to be able to trade for somebody like Zach Ertz. But I don't know where that would be coming from because they don't have a whole lot of draft capital to give up. And this is why, in theory, in my own head, that the Seahawks, they are part of every single conversation. But if I'm the Seahawks, I'm trying to feel out what I would have to give up, what the market would have to give up for Zach Ertz. Because the reality is the Eagles are in a trade or cut situation. They're going to try and see if they can get a trade for Ertz, but they most likely, if they cannot, will have to cut him. And so I think that the Seahawks are trying to see if Zach Ertz might be available down the line if the Eagles are asking for way too much in a trade and saying, okay, now we've got a better pulse on if he is available for us down the line in free agency.
And potentially a more affordable deal.
Correct.
Exactly. There are a couple things that I do like about it. Now, I would love for the Seattle Seahawks to have an elite or top five tight end. I think it's something that they've been missing ever since, don't forget the name, Jimmy Graham. The tight end usage in 2020 was an under-the-radar part of their offensive struggles also. We don't really talk about it enough, but that was a huge problem. I don't know if it was personnel execution, not including them in the game plan. I don't know what it was, but they needed to be used better, and it would have helped that offense. Ertz is also 30 years old, so he's not like, as Curtis said, the decrepit 35-year-old Greg Olsen.
Ancient, though.
Okay, shout out to the 30s out there. You two will eventually
still
join that club. You've got two more months, Curtis. Two more months, you're part of that club, too. On the other hand, like you said, Jake, you've got, what, four draft picks? What are you trading for this guy? I would assume maybe it's like a 2022, whatever you're trying to make it. But
yeah,
it's just not worth it to me.
No, it's not
worth it. You've got too many other pieces you need.
Look, his cap hit, this is another thing that I take away from it. His cap hit, you are only thinking about this in terms of being able to manipulate that cap hit. If you're looking at it and saying, hey, we're going to trade for Zach Ertz, and then we're going to absorb that 1 year $8 million that he has on his contract, you're insane. They would sign, then probably extend him to try and take that cap number down in 2021. But it only further proves the point that, look, if they're thinking or even having this conversation about Zach Ertz, then they're not necessarily worried about what their current cap space looks like. There's a lot of opportunity to maneuver and create more down the line. And that's really the only thing that encourages me as I sit back and think about, okay, why are they in this deal? Why are they looking at it? They better not be making a move like this in sacrifice of upgrading their offensive line, which is obviously a big hot topic for no specific reason, Stacey.
Number two.
Of these potentially available quarterbacks, which one do you think offers the most upside? Carson Wentz, Sam Darnold, or Jimmy Garoppolo?
The one I think has the most upside is Carson Wentz, without a doubt. Just in terms of his physical abilities, if you could get the most out of one of these three players, it's Carson Wentz. It's not even close. However, in terms of upside, in terms of stability, I think it's Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo brings more stability in his play than anything else. What the problem with Jimmy Garoppolo has been his injury history, and if you're bringing him into a place where you feel like you can protect him well, then I think Jimmy Garoppolo brings the most stability. But the most upside, no doubt, is Carson Wentz.
Jimmy Garoppolo, it gets compared to Jared Goff a lot because they're both quarterbacks who have underperformed expectations in the same division with two teams that have had great defenses of late and who have been in a Super Bowl and lost with those two quarterbacks under center. That said, I think they are more different than they are alike. I also think Jimmy Garoppolo is just better than Goff. And I know Goff wasn't one of these options, but I say that to point out that Jimmy Garoppolo in his career, I know he's been on a great team, but he's 24-8. That's a great winning percentage, completing just under 70% of his passes, 51 touchdowns to 26 interceptions. Those aren't like eye-popping numbers, but he is better than I think people expect. Like Jake said, his problem has not been that he is an awful quarterback. His problem has been he just can't stay on the field long enough to keep improving and build that chemistry with the guys around him. Also, that was just in an injury-plagued season for the 49ers where they never really got their feet under them, especially on with that offensive group. So, I don't know. I'm hesitant to say Carson Wentz. I know his ceiling during the course of his career has been higher. He was this close to being MVP that year. Who was MVP that year?
In 2017.
Oh, was that Mahomes? No,
I think
no.
It was Tom Brady.
Tom Brady was. So Carson Wentz was close to being that. I mean, that ceiling that he hit is higher than either of those quarterbacks, Garoppolo and Darnold, have touched. After seeing that last year by Wentz, I don't know. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe this is going to be a freezing cold take. I'm not convinced that that wasn't like an aberration.
Aberration.
Next question.
Number three.
Our friends in Eastern Washington always get a good laugh at us when it snows over here. So snow in Western Washington, underrated, overrated, or properly rated?
Properly. Everyone gets excited about it.
Yeah, I think it's properly rated. I mean, it happens once. I mean, it happened 2 years ago.
Never.
So it hardly ever really happens. So I believe the excitement level for something like this is, it warrants being excited about it. But I think when you look at the flooding and everything else that happens, you're like, ah, man, I don't like dealing with the aftermath of the snow, but I love having the snow in the moment.
I do too. I love being inside when it's snowing outside. And look, did I try to clean snow off my car with a spatula this morning? Yes. Did I try to clear a path through the snow with a rake very ineffectively? Yes. Shout out to Jordan from the VA for helping me with all of that, Nurse Jordan. But people that deal with snow a lot like to pretend that people in Seattle don't know how to handle the snow. Have you driven in it? I was slipping and sliding all the way until I got to the main road. It's not. Why are you laughing, Jake? Why are you laughing?
The 360 says, no. Stacy, next time try melting the snow with a blow dryer and extension cord.
That's
that would
a great
be a
idea.
Lot better than a rake.
It's a great idea.
Perfect.
It was. I think it would be a brilliant plan. I love the snow every second of it until I had to shovel my driveway. That was the worst part of it. Absolute worst part of it. But other than that, you could sign me up for it all the time.
All right. Mike Salk said that he was fine with the Mariners not making any significant moves this offseason, though he had his eye on 2022. Does the signing of James Paxton change his mind at all about what they can accomplish this year? We'll ask him next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, when you joined us on Friday, I was trying to squeeze in some golf talk, so we were talking about Pebble Beach. And turns out Spieth didn't win after all, but it was also this guy. He's 25 years old. What's his name? Maverick McNealy. And he got second or third. Now, Kyle was explaining this story to you, Jake. It turns out his dad is already a billionaire. So that like 800K purse for this doesn't mean a ton, maybe. And I'm mostly very envious now of a 25-year-old that lives this life.
Yeah, the poor guy grew up basically at Pebble Beach.
Yeah, exactly. So, playing in his backyard.
Playing out in his backyard. And yeah, you know that there are two people on the PGA Tour both named Maverick?
Stop. Are they both 25?
I don't know how old the other one is. I just read about him yesterday. I didn't know there was a second Maverick, but they got two Mavericks on the tour. That just shows how wild and crazy those guys are.
Well, I would love that name. I mean, Maverick McNealy is a heck of a golfer's name
it
if there's anybody
is.
Out there. Now, Jordan Spieth, how'd your boy do?
Well, he came in tied third, which was, again, considering where he was, you know, just a couple of months ago, pretty awesome. I mean, he's got two top five finishes here in a row. That's the good news. The bad news is on both occasions, he lost final day lead. So, you know, got to work on the closing element of it. But look, the golf world is better when its stars are back. And other than Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth is probably the most charismatic winner on the tour. So, you know, when you watch the golf around the tournaments that he's in it, he is the focal point because he is sort of their hope that people will continue to watch because people like a star story.
Now, speaking of having a star, this is in terms of Mariners quality of stars, but the Mariners got a bit of big news over the weekend that they were signing back to a one-year deal. The Big Maple, James Paxton, what'd you make of that signing, Saul?
I like it. You know, again, anything that you can get on a short-term deal, you know, the Mariners have some money to spend, so why not bring in a veteran, especially somebody who you know, who you like, who you think can be a leader for you and set a good example. You know, they're not bringing somebody back unless he fits those parameters. So, you know, I like it. I don't know that James Paxton can remain healthy enough to be a legitimate factor for them. What I like here is that you're not counting on him. A few years ago, you were counting on James Paxton, which turned out to be a mistake almost every year, not because he's a bad pitcher. He's obviously got incredible stuff, but just because he struggles to maintain his health. And now you don't have to worry about it. This is an extra addition to a team to try to help, you know, give yourself a little bit more playability over the course of the year. No downside to this.
Well, and it's not like you're moving Dunn or anyone out of, you know, the rotation. Like, presumably, it'll be Margavicious. So you're still getting your young guys plenty of experience just with Paxton in there.
Yeah, and you know, they're going to have a six-man rotation because they want to see these guys
right, for
development purposes. And you know that over the course of the year, very rare for any team to only throw six starters. So, you know, you're going to get a chance to see all of the guys. I'm fairly certain you're going to see Logan Gilbert before too long. He's your first round pick from a couple of years ago. And I think that he does have the possibility of having success nearly right away. He has good command of all of his pitches, but more than that, he's got one of these unique funky deliveries so that when he's delivering the ball, it's almost got that Randy Johnson effect of the ball being a whole lot closer to the hitter than they're ready for. So, long arms, right, type of delivery where he's leaning towards the batter. I think he's a type of player that you could see some very, very quick success from.
Yeah, I called this a win-win on both sides, Salk. I thought that this is a win if you're James Paxton and you want to have a one-year prove-it deal and a chance to showcase yourself. Why not do it in a place that you're extremely comfortable in, a place that you call home in the offseason? And that's the opportunity for what he has with the Mariners, and for the Mariners side of it, a chance to, as you said, you're not necessarily counting on it, but he could significantly upgrade your six-man pitching rotation and put you in a better position to compete when you're at the deadline and maybe get some capital back for a team that's looking to, you know, add a veteran pitcher that can go to the postseason.
Yeah, how nice would it be to be able to get an $8 million prove-it deal?
Yeah, it would be nice.
That's That's a pretty good spot to be in as an $8 million prove-it deal. You know, Stacey, I've seen your paycheck. It's not quite $8 million, but I thought it was enough to afford a shovel.
Were you listening? Okay, first of all, we don't normally get this level of snow, so why would I buy a shovel when I could buy other things? And the rake I thought would work. I tried it a little bit on a table in my yard, and it worked. So then when I walked to my car, I thought it would be fine. And it didn't end up mattering because the neighbor, the Jordan, came over and helped me out, and it was fine. But I had a spatula. The spatula worked fine. You know what? I could have gotten the job done with the spatula.
Again, like shovel $20, maybe another 15 for an ice scraper to make sure that your car is clear. Like, I don't know, it's not $8 million, but I feel like you could handle that.
A shovel now, I'm never going to use it again until next year.
No, and who would want to be prepared?
No, now that I know that Jordan lives so close with the shovel, he can help, right?
You want to be like the Mariners, right? You get your Ken Giles this year for use next year. You just get a good deal on that shovel.
That's exactly right.
Nobody needs it.
It's an investment piece.
Yes.
Salk, where do you think the Mariners are currently at with, you know, all the signings that they made? Look, they weren't amazing signings, but Curtis made a great point. That Jerry Dipoto has been very true to his word in terms of how he was going to go about this rebuilding process, how he was going to go about this 2021 offseason. He's pretty much hit every single point that he said he was going to do in 2021.
Yeah, I think Jerry tends to be like that. I think he's been a little frustrated this offseason that he didn't have more opportunities to get stuff done. You know, he had a couple of guys that they had reached out to where they thought maybe they'd be able to bring him in. Tommy LaStella was one. I think he'd love to upgrade some of that defense. But, you know, Jerry's in a good spot. And we've talked about this before, the sign they have hanging in their office saying that patience is the shortcut for them. They've got to remain patient. They've got to continue to develop their young guys, which means giving them space to develop at the major league level eventually. So he didn't have that much he could do, right? He had a couple little moves here and there, and I love to see them adding pitching. The only thing I was hoping they would be able to do more of would be to add, you know, maybe some long-term deals for relievers, right, 2-3 years of guys that could continue to contribute once the Mariners are really ready to compete. They don't seem to have been able to do that. But those are the types of things that you can do at any point. So it's not like there was some sort of a pressing need. I think they've put themselves in a decent spot here to kind of wait and see what happens, give their young guys the opportunity, run them out nearly every single day. And then if they need to acquire at the deadline, if they actually are in it, then they're able to do so. And if they're still not ready to go, then you may have Kyle Seager, James Paxton, and others to deal. So I absolutely like what DePoto's done.
He is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. You know, I'm going to try not to take offense to you calling me out for my use of a rake for the snow, but it'll take me a while to get over it. I thought it was pretty ingenious. It's smart.
Yeah, no,
it's resourceful.
It's
I'm a resourceful person. It's creative.
But ineffective. Ineffective.
It got snow out of the way. Just it took a while.
It might have sprayed the top layer a little bit, but not much other than that.
Thanks, Mike.
Raking snow. See you guys.
All right, guys. Curtis is having nightmares after hearing one Seahawks rumor this weekend. We'll tell you why next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Well, producer Curtis Rogers is a little bit nervous that the Seahawks may not have learned a very important lesson from this past season. And it has nothing to do with, failures on the offense per se or injuries or anything like that. No. It has everything to do with Greg Olsen, Curtis.
I don't know if I made myself clear.
I'm not sure.
A week ago.
If when you were screaming into the mic.
I don't think you did because the Seahawks are trying to test you again.
After I burst a blood vessel in my eye.
Calling a 35-year-old man decrepit.
Where's the lie? Where
Curtis,
is the lie?
Come on. Point being that Curtis took a lot of offense to Greg Olsen potentially having buyer's remorse, saying maybe he had a little bit of buyer's remorse there after taking $8 million to come play for the Seattle Seahawks. And lo and behold, yet another rumor links another star tight end to the Seahawks under a similar price tag. That would be Philadelphia Eagles tight end Zach Ertz. Now, there's a rumor that the Seahawks were one of the teams in trade talks with the Eagles to have Zach Ertz land in Seattle. Ertz has 1 year remaining on his deal, $8.2 million salary. Now, he is 5 years younger than Olsen. Obviously, though, because he's not a free agent, the Seattle Seahawks would have to give something up in order to acquire him. And so, once again, Curtis was saying, are we doing this all over again? Are you going to bring in someone who was a total star in the league that has since had some injury problems to come in and underperform for not a lot of money? For a lot of money.
Got to have those hashtag nice guys in your locker room and pay them $8 million.
And to top it off, carries a cap hit of over $12 million. So how does that make sense? Okay, so I want to walk people through this just very quickly, and then we can get into the talent evaluation of this. But it makes very little sense on its face as to why you would do this. Why would a team basically take away all of their capital or any of the cap space that they could muster up and waste $12 million of it on a tight end like Zach Ertz? Well, the reality is that they wouldn't do that. They would trade, and then they would extend Zach Ertz to try and lessen that blow off their 2021, off of Zach Ertz's 2021 salary and his cap hit. So that's how they would maneuver that for this to make any sense whatsoever. That's the only way that they would do this deal. At least I would hope, because if you did it, if you did not, and you just carried this, this would make zero sense. And I believe everyone here in Seattle would be livid, much like Curtis Rogers. Now, from a talent evaluation standpoint, I believe Zach Ertz is significantly better than Greg Olsen, significantly better. But to Curtis Rogers' point, you have a trend here of tight ends who are on kind of the downward trajectory of their career. Now, Zach Ertz at 31 or 30 when he's playing could have a spike. I mean, we're talking about a player who historically has been one of the best tight ends in the league in terms of, you know, receptions, yards, has been pretty consistent in terms of touchdowns, all of that. But at the same time, he ended this last season 11 games, only played 11 games, and his production was by far his worst in his entire NFL career. 36 receptions, 335 yards, one touchdown. A lot of dysfunction going on offense in Philly, but do you really want to test that theory out, right? And I think that that's the big question, is do you want to take that kind of a gamble with a guy like Zach Ertz? I don't know. I understand why people would be very, very hesitant to walk down that road.
Zach Ertz is a great weapon for a team that is a piece or two removed from a Super Bowl. Like, if you're the Buffalo Bills and they were like, all we have is Dawson Knox their guy or is he on another
team?
He's their guy. If you were like, we need an elite tight end, or maybe you, if you're the Bills, you might want an elite running back. You're looking at Chris Carson or something. Yeah, you're a piece or two removed from getting past the Chiefs or getting past whoever is in your way in the AFC. The Seahawks not only have less draft capital and less salary space, but are also more pieces removed. And I think the tight end usage was a problem. I don't know if it was personnel. I think that was part of it. I don't know if it was game planning, if it was Russell Wilson not finding. I don't know what it
is. A huge part of it was system. I'll just say that right off the top.
So a huge part of it is system. It was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about protection. We talk about Russell Wilson. We talk about all this stuff, not using the running backs enough, whatever it is. The tight end usage in 2020 was an under-the-radar part of their offensive struggles. Ertz is only 30 years old. He would come in, and he would be not only your most experienced guy, but probably your most talented. Will Dissly is great, but he is going to be your most experienced returning starter.
I would
starter.
Say Will Dissly is good. I wouldn't say great.
But Will Dissly is good.
Is a good tight end in this league.
You've essentially got Will Dissly, and you've got Colby Parkinson, who has very little experience.
Right, but I think that the talent of Colby Parkinson,
the ceiling
is
higher.
Yes, I mean, he's an intriguing tight end for me. I really like him, but I believe that there's optimism for a different tight end to come in here and have more success than what Greg Olsen did because of a new system. But I think that the question is, do you really want to pay that type of capital to that tight end who's coming off of one of his worst years, knowing that you have to pay for the name, right? The name and the past production. And will you get a return on your investment in terms of getting that high-level production, getting Zach Ertz to return to that form? That's a scary proposition when a huge need that you have and a hot sticking button item right now is offensive line, right? And there are other positions that you want to address as well. I think that that is also, you know, a big part of this reason why everybody's hesitant in this conversation. But you could get somebody like Gerald Everett or somebody along those lines that can come in at a lesser price that still has good high talent potentially available to them. The other thing that I really truly believe in this with the Seahawks, Stacey, is that the Seahawks are in pretty much every deal. So it doesn't surprise me that there were rumors that they were asking about Zach Ertz from just a talent evaluation standpoint and their roster needs. It makes sense. However, I do not think that they will go through with the trade. I believe that they would be more willing to risk losing Zach Ertz, but also holding out for hope that he might get cut from Philly rather than being traded, because they're not in position with the lack of draft capital that they currently have to be able to trade him. They have to wait for him to be cut for them to actually sign him. That's the only way I'd see a Zach Ertz addition to this roster ever happening.
And I don't mean to knock Ertz. This isn't a knock on Ertz. In fact, this isn't even a knock necessarily on Wilson. I'm just really tired of seeing this very, like, on-brand Seahawks thing that they do. And there are many good things, many great things that the front office does. One of the things I haven't been a fan of is getting guys in here at relatively expensive price tags who used to be huge stars who are looking for maybe a little bit of a revamp to their career and then leave after one season. You didn't give up nearly as much in the trade for Jadeveon Clowney, but he still took up a pretty notable portion of your salary cap because he was playing under the franchise tag, left after a year, had three sacks with you. Brought in Sheldon Richardson, left after a year. There have been other guys. Greg Olsen left after a year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I get the win now window thing, and I get why you would do that. There have been teams that have done that a little more effectively.
Correct. I agree. And the reason why I believe they've been able to do that more effectively, other teams in the past, is because you've got an exact system fits. I mean, think about Jadeveon Clowney. You thought that you can transition Clowney, right? And I completely understand the sentiment because that's what he was in high school and college, a 4-3 defensive end. He was a 3-4 outside linebacker with the Houston Texans, and you tell yourself, hey, we can get him back to playing his original position, what he's comfortable with at defensive end, and he's going to turn into a superstar. He's going to be unbelievable. Well, that didn't really pan out for you, right? Because they were, as Clowney said, I've got to make this transition, right? That's how he phrased it, that I still have a lot to learn and a lot to work through at that point. They have yet to acquire a veteran player like this in these circumstances that is a direct system fit, that is a direct guy that they can point at and say, this is exactly how we're going to use him. We know the exact plan that we have to utilize his strengths and to be a great fit and transition into our offense or into our defense. There's been more of an experimental aspect of it, and also hoping that you can get back some of that that play that they originally had in earlier in their careers. And so that's why, to me, it hasn't worked out for them in the past, Stacey. They haven't found those guys in the past. And one of the other things that I would love for them to find is continue to find DJ Reeds, right? It's really hard to do. And I'm not saying that you could go out there and there's a million of them. But what they were so successful at is taking guys that had major chips on their shoulders, that had a lot to prove, that had a lot of upside, and they were able to get those guys and turn them into somebody. They were able to turn them into somebody because they came in motivated, wanting to prove themselves, still young, still hungry, still fresh, and I would love to see more of the same with that.
Now, Stacey, mm-hmm. we've rattled off a lot of reasons why we think the Seahawks should not entertain Zach Ertz.
Yeah.
Could there be a reason you would want him here specifically?
Absolutely. Yes.
Now, Ertz has a reputation in the NFL as an emotional guy. Maybe someone not afraid to shed some tears on the field.
Same.
In fact, here's Shaquille Griffin talking with 710 about a year ago about some weird sounds that Zach Ertz kind of makes out on the field.
Actually, I heard a little bit when Bradley McDougal had a good hit on him.
Yeah. Really?
He took some time to get up, and it was just, I don't know, it It kind of sounded more like a moan. It was kind of awkward.
Was he whimpering?
Yeah, maybe something like whimpering? That. It was kind of awkward. I just remember Bradley was like, did y'all hear make that noise? I feel like I would make a different sound if I got hit that way. You know, I feel like it would hurt. I'd probably just, you know, yell a little bit. It sounds just a little tad bit different.
Stacey, could you possibly hand down your crybaby nickname to
Finally,
Zach Ertz?
I'm not crybaby Stacey anymore. Zach, you're crybaby Stacey.
So immediately upon coming into town, Zach Ertz has a reputation for crying on the field when taking hits. Now, to his credit, he's gotten back up and he still played the game,
yeah.
But has a reputation of this. That I think
there's
for you, that would be high motivation to be able to pass on the baton to Zach
Let's
Ertz.
Let's stop shaming people for crying, even though I'm not crybaby Stacey anymore.
What?
And I especially won't be if Zach Ertz comes here, because then he's going to take that moniker. All right. Shannon Dreher, Mariners insider for 710 ESPN Seattle, joins us next to talk all things Paxton, plus more moves the Mariners have made.